Well, good morning, and I am so glad you're here. I knew that we were entering the section in our Bible under the heading of submission, and so nobody wants to talk about that. So I am glad that you have come. I want to start us in two places that you would probably not think we would start, Genesis 1:1 and Colossians 1. So can you go to those two places in your Bible and take a peek at Genesis 1:1 and Colossians 1:16. Sometimes when we jump into a complicated or complex teaching in God's Word, it's really helpful to go back a bit. Go to the foundation. Go to the beginning point. The spot where it all rests. And submission can be a difficult topic, whether we're talking about submission in the workplace, or submission to government, or submission in a marriage, or children in submission to their parents. And I think it's helpful to pause a second and say, well, what's the basis of this? Why? Where does this come from? What's the scaffolding? And in Genesis chapter 1, verse number 1, is the bulwark behind why we're going to talk about being in submission to the government today. And you say, really? Yeah, really. Genesis 1:1, what does it say? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In the beginning, God did something. And what he did was he created. Now go to Colossians chapter 1, where Paul takes Genesis 1:1 and says, well, let me add just a little bit to that, blow it up a little bit, extend it out a little bit. Colossians 1:1 starts the idea in, or excuse me, Colossians 1:15 is where he starts the idea. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him, that is the Son, Jesus Christ, all things were created. All right, that's what Genesis 1:1 says. Now here's the blow up, the underlying, the explanation of all things. What kinds of all things? Well, things in heaven. Okay. Things on earth. Okay. Things visible. Okay, I'm all right. Things invisible. And now we're getting into that spooky stuff, but okay. Whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. Wow. No discussion of any form of submission should start without understanding why. What's the root of it? The root of it is God created, and in his creation, he made sure that we knew he was behind, in charge of, forming, responsible for, sovereign over all things that are created. And then, in this particular passage, made sure that we knew those were things that we can see and things we cannot. That it's things that are in control over our lives, whether we like it or not. That would be thrones and powers and rulers and authorities. Because all things, including thrones and powers and authorities, were created by him. So now, when we go to the section we're in 1 Peter, and we're going to talk about what is it like to live godly in a pagan society, which could have been written yesterday for us, we have this backdrop that, okay, wait a minute, the basis upon which Peter is going to call us to live godly in a pagan society has as its root, wait a minute, God is sovereign over all. If you don't buy that God is sovereign, you're not going to buy submission. Just telling you. Whether it's in the workplace, in a home, in government, if you don't put God sovereign over it all as creator, then you're going to struggle every step of the way. You're going to struggle in relationships at work. You're going to struggle in relationships at home. You're going to struggle in relationships to anybody who has authority over you, whether that's the policeman who dares to say you can't drive over 65 miles an hour on the freeway, or any other authority. Recognizing God's sovereignty as creator over these specific things is the backdrop. When you were a teenager, you rebelled over all forms of authority. It's natural, it's normal, it's part of growing up. But if you stay in that mode, then you're still living in Hippieville. Right? Because you didn't get a real kid's job because you couldn't stand having anybody in authority over you. You struggle in your marriage because you don't want to set up any kinds of lines of authority there. Your kids are likely in rebellion because you didn't require of them what you wouldn't require of you. And you certainly think the government is out to get you. So, turn to 1 Peter. What does Peter have to say about submission? And I'm going to break it down today. We're going to talk about government. And then we're going to talk about workplace and home relationships. So, we're in 1 Peter, chapter 2. We're going to start at verse 12. 2:12. He's going to put a little bookend to what might be called the noble life. If you live godly in a pagan society, you're living the noble life. I love that word, noble. Don't you like noble? I like that word. Anyway, what are the two bookends that he puts around that, the two principles? Well, one of them shows up in verse 12, and the other one shows up in chapter 3, verse 9. Look at verse 12. He says, "Live such good lives among the pagans that, though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us." Live a life that, in essence, serves as an example. That's one bookend. And then look at chapter 3, verse number 9. At the end of this section, he says, "Do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult. On the contrary, live this way. You repay evil with a blessing, because to this you were called, so that you may inherit a blessing." And then he quotes some Old Testament passages. The two bookends for living what I'm calling the noble life, a life that honors God in a society that does not, one is live a life that serves as an example. And then one, make sure and don't repay evil with evil. One of my first examples that I thought of this business about living a life that serves as an example, the idea is that when your life is examined, does your life glorify God? When I got my new car, it's a used new car, but I got my new car, it had that fancy-dancy little button you push and somebody says, "Hello, how may I help you?" And I asked the kid that was showing me all the electronics in this zippy-doo-na car, I said, "Is Big Brother listening to me all the time? Or do I have to push the button for him or her to hear me?" He kind of chuckled. I kind of chuckled. But at the core of me, I wanted to know, "Can you hear me singing? Not well? Do I have to summon you or do you summon yourself?" Because like everyone, the idea of having your life examined is less than lovely. You want somebody walking around with a video camera from the time you got up this morning, what kind of attitude you had as you were getting the children up, those kind words you expressed to your spouse. Some of you are really laughing. You know, those thoughts you had for the drivers en route to wherever you were going. You know, do we want that? Well, in Daniel's case, in Daniel 6, they wanted to find a way to nail him. And their summary after they examined his life was, if we're going to get him, we're going to have to get him for breaking the religious part of the law. We can't get him for anything else. I'd love that to be true of my life. I'd love somebody to say, if you're going to get her, you can't get her the way she drives. No, she's a law-abiding citizen. You know, if you're going to get her, you're going to add it. Attitude. She is model. Wouldn't you love that to be true? I confess to you, it is not. I do not obey all the laws of the land, especially the ones having to do with operations of my auto. But Peter's making a point that the life that is noble, that's lived with godly principles in a pagan society, is a life that can be examined. Now, I would hope in some areas of my life that it could be examined. The other bookend he throws in there is the part about live a life that doesn't repay evil for evil. In a pagan society where you're odd man out as a believer in Jesus Christ, you're going to be tempted to repay evil with evil because there will be plenty of evil coming your way. Last week, two blocks down, coming up to the light, I'm trying to break my habit of running red lights, not running them, but trying to get through when they're pink.
Pink.
I have ways of justifying everything. Anyway, I just about broke my habit of that, so it goes yellow. I hit my brakes. Okay, I hit my brakes, and I stopped. It was not a sudden stop. It was just, I could have done either, but I chose to stop. Well, when I chose to stop, I look up in my rearview mirror, and the lady behind me, who was a middle-aged woman, not a kid, well, I think probably as a teacher at Saddleback, was trying to get in and get over. It was about noon, so she may have had a 12 o'clock class or something. But because I stopped, therefore she had to stop. You should have seen her go crazy. I mean, in the rearview mirror, I'm seeing this woman go. I'm not kidding. Okay. The godly thing to do would have been to shut my mouth, make no gesture, and pull quickly and quietly away. Nah. Way too good. She's on the edge. Can I push her over? Okay, you're laughing. And another time I'll tell you what I did. My point is, living a life that does not repay evil for evil. Resisting those kinds of temptations. I didn't do anything wrong. I stopped appropriately, safely, and I should have stopped. But I was bombarded by a reaction, and I had an opportunity to let it go or not. I confess, I chose the not. My point. If I'm going to live a life that Peter is going to now suggest is a life of submission, and his first illustration has to do with the government, I have to kind of get my mind around the idea that there is incumbent on me a responsibility to live differently than everyone else. I do not always live up to it, but there is a responsibility. I am supposed to live my life in such a way that it can be examined. I am supposed to live my life in such a way that I do not repay evil for evil, that I am not reactive, that I am not, you know, forcing it back when it comes to me. Now, with those bookends in mind, he's going to start talking about submission. Verse 13. He says, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority. Now, just stop right there. Every human authority. Who do we not have to submit ourselves to that's a human authority? Zip, zero, nada. However, there appear to be some scenarios, and I'll get to those in a moment, when there is an unlawful order that as a believer violates a higher calling, and therefore you respond differently. But in general, the statement is, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority. The concept here is, this word submit, is to have an overwhelming desire, this is what I put in your notes, to give yourself to the other person for their benefit, no matter what it costs you. So you immediately think of, let's say, a workplace. An employee and an employer. An employee that is trying to live a godly life in a pagan society chooses to submit to the authority, the boss, who may be cranky, stupid, inappropriate, ineffective, lousy, all of that may be true, but who says, for the Lord's sake, not the boss's sake. He didn't deserve it. He didn't earn it. He didn't get it. But for the Lord's sake, I choose to submit myself to every human authority. Now, submit is not the same as, that is another synonymous term for be a doormat. I've known many women in abusive relationships that took this verse and said, I'm supposed to take it. Wait a minute. That is not the term. The term is hypoteso. It means to plan things in order. When you submit, you place things in an orderly fashion. Submission is not the willy-nilly, I got no rights, don't look at me, please, I have nothing to say, whatever you, and you melt away. That is not biblical submission. Biblical submission to every human authority for the Lord's sake is the idea, it's a military term, it means to make certain there's order in a workplace. Even an ineffective, lousy boss is still the boss. If you ignore them, the workplace gets out of kilter. Now, in a perfect, wonderful world, we would remove the poor one and put in an effective one. But the point being that the biblical term of submission is to make sure there's order so things happen. Is the boss always the smartest person in the room? Most definitely not. Do they always have the best idea? Most definitely not. But if they are not functioning, then it's out of order and the whole thing goes amok. You've all been in those scenarios. In exactly the same way, in a government where there is layers of responsibility for people's lives, if it is not orderly, then it goes amok. Is every person in government one that you would choose? Yeah, he's my hero, my leader, I love him. No. But if the role is not there, then there is not order. Likewise, home. Is the husband always who he should be? So does he get the job of head of the house because he's smarter? No. Does he get the job because he's wiser? Not necessarily. Does he get the job because he is bigger, stronger? No. He gets the job because God knew a home needed order, and he established it. Submission is an issue of order, not worthiness. We tend to look at a boss and go, he's not worthy of my support. He's a jerk. Really? Let's read it again. Submit yourself for the Lord's sake, not his, to every human authority. All right, let me keep going. Whether to the emperor, that would be the top dog, as a supreme authority, or to governors who were sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves. Submit yourself for the Lord's sake. Be a slave to God. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the emperor. Now, the variety of kinds of examples he's going to give here in a minute. He's starting with government. Then he's going to move to in a workplace. He's going to talk about slaves and masters. Then he's certainly going to get into wives and husbands. And in other places in our Bible, it even gets deeper than that. There are places in our Bible that talk about younger men being in submission to older men. Again, an issue of order. Children, of course, being in submission to their parents. And everyone, in every scenario, being in submission to whoever the authority is. Now, Romans 13:1 is a very important verse as it relates to government. I put it in your notes. Let everyone, again, who doesn't have to be included in this verse? Okay? Let everyone be subject to the governing authorities. Because there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Now, who likes that verse? I mean, in today's modern society, do you jump up and down with that one? Yay, that is so good. I really like that. State senator or my two state senators, yes. I really like them. Or my governor. Oh, love those decisions he's making. Woo. Just line right up with my heart. So my priorities right there. Or federal government. Really support some of those new policies. Or did you laugh your fool head off when you saw Sarah Palin doing the Sam I Am parody at the CPAC? Okay. However, Romans 13:1. Let everyone be subject to the governing authorities. For why? There is no authority that didn't ultimately find it was established by God. The authorities that exist, the ones I like and the ones I don't like, have been established by God. Now, how easy is that to swallow? Some of you are just looking at me like, oh, you are full of it, world. I am reading the book. I am not proposing a personal perspective. It is hard. Let's make it a little bit easier for a moment. Think of a boss you had at some point in your life that was an absolute jerk. You got one in mind, can you? None of you work for me right now, so you can't say Debbie has, so that cannot be your example, Deb. You got somebody in your mind? Okay. Is it easy for you to say, oh, you know what, Mr. whatever his name was, he was established by God in my life? No, it is not. My very first job was in England. We lived in this little Cornish town in the western side of England, and come summer, between my junior and senior year, I wanted a little pocket change, and so my dad suggested I get a job. Well, in order to get a job, I had to get this little special work permit thing from England that, you know, because I was there on a visa, and I got it. I had to fill out forms and blah, blah, blah. I couldn't make more than X number of dollars. Wasn't going to make that anyway, but, you know, went through all the process, and then I started applying for little jobs in this Cornish town. And in the summer, during the winter, there would be less than 10,000 people in the whole area, you know, number of villages. But in the summer, it swelled up to 100,000 people because it was the Cornish coast, and it's where they go to vacation. They call it going on holiday. Mm-hmm. And they go for a week, or if they're real rich, 2 weeks, and they stay at the same hotel. And, you know, the little town becomes a very, vacation spot. So suddenly, you know, the ice cream shop does all of its business during those 3 months, and the whatever shop and the whatever shop. So at any rate, I got a job at the little grocery store. And I was the only American kid in town except for my brother. And of course, we are spotted immediately by the way we, you know, talk and dress and everything. And I went to work there, and the boss that was running the little grocer didn't like me. His boss, the owner, hired me. But the guy who ran it, he didn't like me. He didn't like Americans. And so he made me do all the sketchy work. You know, the milk would get delivered from the dairy every morning. It came in literal heavy white or clear bottles. And it would be delivered on the bottom floor, and everything goes up three floors in England. So you would have to go down and get the big case of these thick milk bottles and carry them up two flights of stairs to get them in the cooler to sell them. Guess whose job it was to get. Now, there were young men that worked there, but it was my job to go get the milk. Cheese came in those big, round whatevers, and you literally cut off sections. That's how I learned to love cheese, by the way. But anyway, the big cheese would come in those big barrels and would be delivered downstairs and have to be brought upstairs in the barrel, and he would make me go get it. And so I was there, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks, and this man, he was mean. So I remember going home telling my dad, "Dad, this guy is, he's a lousy boss." And I gave him three suggestions how it could be run more smoothly. Remember, I'm the one that wasn't allowed to play in the certain little section of the store in kindergarten anymore because I was organizing it too much and the teacher wanted everyone else to have a chance. So I was still doing it now at, you know, 15 years of age. And I gave him some good suggestions about how if we move this and move that, you know, whatever. And he just keeps giving me all this awful work. And today I hurt my back because I was carrying whatever it was up. And I was whining and whining and whining at my father. And my father said, "Sherry, are you a good employee?" And I said, "I think I am." He said, "Well, tell me what's the evidence that you're a good employee." And I show up on time and I work hard and I don't stand around and talk. And if they tell me to do something, I do it. I don't stand there and argue with them. I give them a look, but I, you know, no, no, no. And so, okay, my father said, "All right, that is your responsibility. Is he a good boss?" "No! Give me the evidence." And I got it. Here's all these reasons why this guy is this terrible boss. He said, "Are you responsible for him?" No. He said, "Then I suggest you hush up and go to work. Because your whole life, you're going to have people that have authority over you that are not going to be doing it the way you think they should. And whether you have a better idea or not, they are an authority." That is the principle about government. See, somehow the boss thing, we can put our arms around that. When we make it a husband and wife relationship, oh, wait a minute, we dismissed that one. And then when we get to government, we start dismissing that one too. The whole idea here that is being talked about in 1 Peter and repeated by Paul in Romans 13 is that God is behind it. And our response to it is because of him, not because of the worthiness of the boss, or in this case, the government. In Titus chapter 3, there's another parallel verse. It says, "Remind the people to be subject to rulers and authorities, to be obedient, to be ready to do whatever is good." Remind the people to be subject. See, we don't get to just say, "Wait a minute, he's a bad boss, he's a lousy husband, he's a lousy president," and badmouth endlessly. There is a responsibility to submit. These powers are ordained by God. And the motive is because, for God's sake, it is God's will that we live this certain way as free people, etc., etc., showing proper respect to everyone, not disrespect. Now, by the way, at no point in our Bible, not Paul, not Peter, not in the passages we were reading in our book, or Romans 13:1, or the one in Titus, none of them are advocating a certain form of government. Now, what do you all think is the biblical form of government? How should government function? You like dictators? So, no thanks to a dictator? Okay. You like Republican? You have a republic, rather? Like republic. You like a democracy? You like those? No, don't like democracies. What does our Bible have to say? Thumbs up for the democracies. Thumbs up for republics. Thumbs down for monarchies. Is that true? nothing. Now, the John Wayne in us, which we've been mentioning lately a lot, has very definitive ideas about how government should function. I personally like a representative government. I like to vote in the guys I like and vote out the guys I don't like. I put up Mr. Ming's yard sign in my yard on Saturday. He opened his little office locally. I'm in support of him. I got a sign. I went home. I put it. I brought my neighbor over. This is the man you should vote for. Yay! I like that. One before, I like him. Not thrilled. Some other levels of government. Would like to have some out. So I would love my Bible to say representative government. But it doesn't. It doesn't. It says, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to, and then it gives the big guy, the emperor, or to the governors. You mean the sheriff? I have to listen to him? I could see maybe you making me listening to the president, but I have to listen to the sheriff? How about city council who makes a dumb decision about how fast we should be able to drive on this particular road? I'm supposed to, for the Lord's sake, be in submission. Now, the concept here is the idea about human authority. That word really means the law of the land. If we had a monarchy, there would be a law to the land. Since we have a representative form of government in our country, we have a law of the land. If we live somewhere else in the United States where there was a tribal leader, there would be a law of the land. You go to Afghanistan, the law of the land is tribal. That's why they're having such an awful time trying to build a nation, because their allegiance is to the tribe, and there are tribal laws. So I put down on my notes, okay, what about law? Has there been a lot of law? What did God say about the laws, the local laws? Do we obey them? Do we abandon them if we don't like them? Well, I gave you two or three examples. The first one is in Romans, we've already looked at. In Ecclesiastes 8, it says, obey the king. Not because he is always good or always right, but because you took an oath to God. Well, what if he's a bad king? Tough. Obey the king. You are doing it as unto the Lord, not as unto the bad king. Matthew 17. There's two of them in Matthew that are great. In Matthew 17, it's a discussion of the temple tax, the religious tax associated with the temple. And they said, well, isn't Jesus going to pay the tax? What did he do? He said, yeah, we got to pay that. Grab that fish right over there, open his mouth. Whoop, big coin. Yeah, go pay both of ours. Pay the tax. Religious tax. Okay, five chapters later, in chapter 22, there's the imperial tax. Tax to Caesar. And what does he say in that situation? It's a very famous passage. Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and render to God the things that are God. He makes a nice clear line. He said, he wants taxes? Pay it. I don't like that. There are too many taxes, in my opinion. They're not appropriate taxes. Did Jesus say? Temple tax. What a waste. Caesar's tax, imperial tax. You know, he's not a good king anyway. Pilate's a real jerk trying to endorse these rules. He did not. He said, pay the temple tax, pay the imperial tax. And the other laws that you can see kind of outlined, before the flood, there was no law. And the description is great wickedness. When we get to the flood, there's a start of a law system. In fact, the first thing that happens is there's a discussion about capital punishment for murder. Then we get to the Old Testament. And the Old Testament outlines for us very clearly, Exodus 20 and many other places, 613 very specific separate commandments covering all aspects of human life and society. And we were meant to obey them. We get to the New Testament, and he takes that as a backdrop, says, oh, let me sum it up for you. Two laws. What are they?
Love God, love your neighbor.
Love God, love your neighbor. Kind of sums it up. You know, and then there are other laws and law systems those of you that know anything about history know that a little bit about Hammurabi. And Hammurabi law that came out of the Babylonians, it had 282 specific laws. And Christians maintained within that law system. Then the Roman laws came by the mid-century BC. And Christians maintained an adherence to those laws. Why? Because they were established by God. Does everything they do right? Does God endorse every aspect of it? No, but it creates order. Human beings must have order. In this case, where it says, whether to the emperor or to the governors, who was the emperor when Peter wrote this? Nero. You know anything about Nero? Started out okay. Did a little reading on him. I wouldn't vote for him. I mean, he got Looney Tunes at the end. Many believe he set the fire in Rome just so as to clear off an area where he could build this big amphitheater deal. He turned really bad. He murdered at least one of his wives and some children and others in the family. I mean, he was not a good guy. That's who Peter's talking about. Hey, you, submit yourself to the Lord, for the Lord's sake, to every human authority, including that guy Nero. And then he says, and the governors. Well, who are the governors in this time? Well, Pilate? I don't know a lot about Pilate, but I don't see him as a totally stand-up dude. You come in contact with Felix in Acts 24 and a guy called Festus in Acts 25. Neither one of them are stellar. The bottom line is the law is the law, and it has to be administered by someone. And God set up a system and said, unto me submit to the laws of the land. Now, before you think, they were under great persecution and he was trying to encourage it. No, this is normal living time. He doesn't start referring to the persecution stuff until later in chapter 13 and in chapter 3 and chapter 4. He's just talking about normal living here. Everyday stuff. Drive the speed limit. Stop at the stop sign. Pay your taxes. You know, obey the law. Now, are there any exceptions? Yes, clearly there are. The exceptions you'll find in your Bible, let me give you three of them. One is in Daniel 3. That's where the three Hebrew children go. They were told to bow down and worship Nebuchadnezzar, and they went, no can do. So clearly there's a principle that when what you're asked to do violates your conscience as it relates to worshiping God, no can do. I think that's pretty obvious. In 1 Samuel 22, Saul's bodyguard, Saul tells his soldiers, and specifically his bodyguard, to go kill off these priests. He wants them out of the way so nobody knows what's going on. It was an unlawful order. That's how the military would phrase it. It's an unlawful order. And the bodyguard goes, I'm not doing it. He broke the law, but he did so in pursuit of a higher law. And then in Acts 4, when Peter and John come before the local officials, they tell them to quit speaking about this guy Jesus. And what is their answer? Sorry, no can do. Got to speak it. So let me give you an illustration. Are there laws about a Christian school that we should and should not obey? Are there two camps here? Are there some laws that we should or some laws that we shouldn't? Well, I know some administrators, some Christian school people, church people, who believe the government should have zero to say about the school. So when the fire marshal shows up to make sure that there's the proper doors and the ventilation is good and, you know, there are ways to get out of the building and the fire extinguishers are filled and whatever, there are a whole camp of Christian school administrators that go, you do not get to come in here and tell us how to do school. This is God's place. I don't have a problem with that. Almost all of you have your children here. Wouldn't you like it to be a safe building? You know, fire hydrant, fire thingies filled properly. Staff know how to use them, where they are. Plenty of doors. We're not stacking stuff up in front of the exits. I'm thinking that's okay law. Now, I'm okay with that one. Fire department, got a little one. Health department wants to make sure that your kid's pizza on Fridays is the right temperature. Because if it's not, nasty little things grow in the cheese. And then kids get sick. I know Christian school administrators go, health department, stay out of my school. My attitude is, you got a temperature? Let's see. Come on in. What's the rule? What do you want? You want one of those little oven thingies that work? You know, come test it. Come test it. If it ain't hot enough, we'll buy another one. I don't want your kid getting sick on little germies on cheese. I'm okay. Now, government shows up and says, Jerry, that little book you're reading to those kids, it says there's mommy and there's daddy and you know, they have a lovely home. We want you to read this book. This one has two mommies, two daddies, some variety thereof. I say, mm-mm, no can do. No can do. Now, from my perspective, that is clearly within the guidelines of submitting myself for the Lord's sake to every human authority. Fire department, come on with me. Yeah, you got it. You know, police, show up. Tell us what we're not doing right. Health department, come on in. Child welfare people come. Want to see if somebody's done something right or wrong as it relates to children. Come on in. But if you're going to force an agenda that is clearly in violation to God's word, then I'm going to go, no. So there are unlawful expectations. But Peter is saying you can't just say, I don't like that law. I'm not a huge fan of our current law as it relates to health care. Too bad. It's a law. It's lawful. I don't particularly like it. Things a little unfair here, a little unfair there. Should have been done this, should have been done that. I'm against it. But I am enforcing it. It's done everywhere. Sight unseen. Yes, sir. Where do we sign? I have 51 employees. I got to do this. Where do I send the money? No. Because I am supposed to submit. Now, if I don't like that law, the wonderful thing about our form of government is I can go to a little meeting on Saturday. I was there. There's three candidates. I liked all of them. Yeah, I'm for it. What you think, I think, yeah, no problem, I'm voting. One of the first things we did when we moved is made sure we got those little change of address cards, got them in so I can vote. Got to vote. I'm voting out that one and I'm voting in that one. That's a great privilege that we have. I lived in a monarchy. Tough. Now, what are the two functions of government officials? What are they supposed to do for us? Well, look at verse 14, 2:14. Okay, you are supposed to submit to the emperor or to the governors who are sent by him, who's him, the Lord, to A, punish those who do wrong, and B, commend those who do right. So, the purpose of good functioning government order in a society is to punish those. Literally, it means to avenge. If you ask me if I believe in capital punishment, my answer is yes, properly done. Because I believe that's one of the roles of government, right there. Literally to avenge. An eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. I'm for it. I'm not callous about it. Please don't think that. But I think it's a proper role for government. Now, the other proper role for government is to praise. To say, good job, society. Keep doing that. So when we have rulers that recognize the role, for example, that people of faith or faith-based organizations, the role we have in society, and they praise us for our function and participation in that, I think that's the right thing for government to do. To punish and to pray. It provides order. So what's the summary? The summary is found in verse 17. So this is how y'all live. Showing submission for the Lord's sake to every human authority, here's how you live. You, A, show proper respect to everyone. Or you might say, honor everyone. What is proper respect? That's not throwing things at people at a meeting that you don't like. That's not screaming at someone because you don't share the same view. Have you never had a conversation with anyone where you were diametrically opposed? Of course you have. Did you win because you got louder? You don't win with your kids when you get louder. When you have those kinds of gut-level disagreements, there has to be respect. You want them to respect you, to hear you. So here's the first principle of the obligations of Christians living in a pagan society is honor all men. Honor. My dad is sending me the vilest, yuckiest emails in regards to our current system of government, and I don't even open them anymore. And I said to him not too long ago, Dad, please, stop it. Well, and he unloads. I said, Dad, when I was a kid, if I behaved like you're behaving, my little bottom would have hurt for weeks. You taught me to respect even those I disagree with vehemently. And while I'm at this, why do Christians pick pet topics? Why is abortion and the gay agenda the only thing we care about? I know, I'm really getting into it today.
Because they're the obvious.
But it's so dumb. It paints us as idiots. When was the last time some guy got up and... Oh, I'm going to get on it. Never mind. Okay, pulling that back and staying with the lesson. Honor all men. Don't pick pet topics and pet projects and scream and holler and be unkind. Don't go into a street corner and some lady's going into somewhere to have something done and scream and holler and throw things at her. That's really helpful. When I'm trying to make a big life-changing decision, it's really helpful to have someone screaming at me. No, there are ways to exercise on our form of government our concerns, but honor all men, all of them, the ones that look funny and act funny and are diametrically opposed to what you and I believe in. Honor them. Sit down, have a conversation. Agree to disagree. Draw boundaries. Okay? Can't be a part of that. Not a problem. But not the screaming and hollering and the venom. I weary of the venom. And I am as right-wingy as all of you in this room, trust me. But honor all men. Proper respect. Second one. Here's his summary. He says, love the brotherhood. Okay, we got to honor them all. But those of us that are people of faith, that are in the family, hey, whew, let's have a love feast. Let's make sure that the bonds of Christ allow us to look at our brothers and sisters with a special kind of favor. Now, do all Christians agree on all points? Heaven, no. But do we have to duke it out? Again, can we not have a principled discussion? Perhaps disagree? Agree to disagree? But his point is love the brotherhood. Honor everyone. Love the brotherhood. Woo! It's kind of like brothers and sisters. You know, your kids squabble like mad. If you have more than one. But one of the things you'll say to one of them at some point is, you better protect your sister. You better be protecting your brother. That better not be happening on the playground. You better be there for your brother, your sister. Same way. Can't we be there for each other? Honest disagreements aside. The third one is, fear God. I think I've mentioned this to you before, but I had a lady one time get in my face and she said, I think you think my children should fear God. And I said, yes, I do. I think they should fear me too. And I think they should fear you. In a sense. I'm using the word fear there. The definition would be reverential awe. You know? Should a kid care about going to the principal's office? Yes! Walking down the hallway, there should be a bit of, oh, crud, I gotta go see. There should be. And they're just scooping in there like, something's wrong. There seemed to be a little reverential awe. You know, when mom or dad sit down in a disciplinary context at home, a little reverential awe is called for. And certainly fearing God in that sense. Recognizing who he is and giving him his place. And then he throws in the last one. Honor the king. Honor the king. Now, one of the great illustrations of this is in Acts 23, when Paul didn't know that Ananias was a high priest. And so he's wailing against Ananias. And the guy goes, I'm going to smack you because you're being disrespectful to the high priest. And Paul immediately goes, he's a high priest? Oh, absolutely wrong on my part. Excuse me, he deserves my respect. He backs the trolley up immediately because of the office. Not because Ananias was any different than he was a few minutes ago when he was nailing him. But once he realized he had that office, he backed the trolley up. I need to respect the office. Look, guys, we can disagree with someone in office, but we must respect the office. I do not endorse the positions of our current commander-in-chief. But if the man said, I'd like to swing by Stony Brook, red, white, and blue's coming out, sister. My children are going to be taught to snap to attention. That man is getting respect and honor that is due his office. Period. Honor the king. Now, in our case, we get to vote out the king, maybe. That's our job as a good citizen. Responsibilities, privileges. But the role for the Christian... four things. Honor them all. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. And honor that king. Sometimes through gritted teeth, but honor the king. Now, my point to you today is, this isn't easy stuff. When we get to husbands and wives, that ain't easy either. It's not because the king is so worthy. Nero was not worthy. It's because there must be order. God knew that. He said, if we're going to live in a society, there's got to be rules. Someone has to enforce those rules. When they're unfair, you can work towards changing them. But nonetheless, the role of the believer is to do things differently as unto him, not because the person deserved it. Okay. You buy that? I got some yeses and some I'm not so sure world. You have some comments? Let's take a few minutes. First of all, let me ask this question. Is that an easy pill to swallow? No. Okay. At least you're struggling. What do you think? Okay. She's so ticked you're not even going to talk to me.
I really liked your point about picking the pet projects. I just see that happen so much in the church, and I get sad when I see the church look like just a big mouth sometimes, you know?
Ooh, good point.
Instead of loving, I mean, I feel like so many non-believers I know in my life, they just see the church as like this big, annoying mouth that is very unloving in their actions about these topics that are so big, abortion. I mean, they are
certainly
big, huge topics, but the topics are so politically out there right now, and then that's just the big, like, we don't know this, you know, that it's so much mouth that it's just sad, you know. I understand why it's tempting to be a mouth.
Yes.
But I liked that point of
and all it does is drive away people.
Sure.
Especially those that need it the most. Mm-hmm. When a church is so controversial about those topics, those people that actually may need the hands of the Lord in their life, and maybe that's what they're missing. And when the church is very closed-minded or polarizing about those issues, those people don't stand a chance.
I have a friend, he's not a close friend, but he lives in Northern California. And years and years and years ago, God burdened his heart over the whole issue of abortion. And he got involved in, you know, some ministries, and he saw the screaming and hollering and all that stuff on the street corners, the confrontation. He just rejected it. He couldn't tolerate it. So you know what he does? He has a relationship. He knows the people that run the clinic. I mean, they're, you know, brings coffee for the staff. I mean, he is really on a first-name basis. But there's a park bench out on the public road right there, and he goes and sits, just sits. Somebody walks by, good morning, nice to see you. If they give him eye contact, then he, next sentence, so how are you today? And then they'll pause, then the next sentence, you know, whatever his next sentence is. And then if they pause some more and sit down on the bench, then he has a conversation with them about alternatives, and could he pray for them, and is there anything I could do for you, and I know some people that would help you, and can I drive you here? And boy, I'm all in favor of that, because I think the issue is the issue. Okay, from my perspective, abortion is murder. Okay, but we rant and rave, and they all go away. Or you do like my pastor did a few Sundays ago. It's more than a few now, I guess. He was teaching on something similar to this, and he got to this point and stopped. He leaned out over the pulpit and he says, let me just stop right here. If there's a woman in this audience today, and there's about 2,000 people in my auditorium on a Sunday morning, if there's somebody sitting here this morning and you find yourself pregnant and you don't know what you're going to do with that child and you're considering an abortion, my wife and I will be right down here at the end of the service, and sight unseen we will adopt that baby. Please come talk to me right now at the end of the service. Honey, right, yeah, okay. And the two of them stood down there. Loved it. Yeah. Isn't that better? It's one thing to have a position on an issue. It's another on how you handle it. Somebody else comment? I think this is a big issue in our culture. Many of us are Americans first and Christians second. We need to be careful about that. And then I am red, white, and blue. I used to say I'm to the right of Genghis Khan in my political persuasions. I really feel strongly about that stuff. But I need to be a believer first. It requires something of me. Different way of demonstrating my gratitude for where I did get to grow up and the privileges I do have. If you lived in Crimea today, and you weren't happy about the current government, you don't get to go down with the placard and put it in your front lawn and say, I'm voting for him, I'm not voting for him. Because they will come blow you away. So maybe a little more gratitude and a little less John Laney. Yes.
And I really feel like if we're not modeling that in our own lives, proper respect, reverential awe, how would our kids know? We're sitting there ranting and raving and, you know, disobeying the rules just because we feel like it, or sneaking into the movies just because we can. And, you know, our kids aren't going to learn it just because we send them to do some work.
Absolutely
because
correct.
They look at us first. If we're not respecting authority, if we're ranting and raving at a police officer when he pulls us over, or any authority in our lives, you know, the kids will grow up to do the same thing. How will they respect authority, and how will they respect God?
And they miss out on something. It's not just the authority that misses out, but your kids miss out when they don't recognize authority in their life. Because all authority does is give them a safe, orderly place to live. That's the whole point of society. So they lose. Not only does the authority lose out, but your kids lose out.
That kind of extreme story that paints us, but when we were in China back in 2010, we were with some of the underground church there. And we were talking to them, and they were saying, we were asking them how it is to live under, obviously, a government that they live under that would be very difficult to live under. And they said, it has made us such strong believers. we would pray for you Americans that you would have it worse, so that you could be a believer first. They said the same word, that you'd be a believer before an American.
Yep.
We're like, ooh, let's not say that. You know, they were making a point, but they were rejoicing in that they've had to live under a very difficult government, but they've been respectful, but it's drawn them to the Lord, like none else.
Yep.
Makes it come back to the government that you don't always agree with here, but look at it a little differently.
Yeah.
They could do that.
Believers first.
Yeah.
As in the Lord. Well, thanks for coming. We've been no fun without you.